1 week before Election Day, and if polls are correct, Governor Branstad will be reelected by a wide margin to his sixth term. This hour, a live conversation with his Democratic opponent, Jack Hatch. It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. State Senator Jack Hatch in our Des Moines studio today. In just a moment, I'll ask him to share his top legislative priorities should he unseat Terry Branstad. We'll ask him about the challenges he's faced fundraising for this campaign and gaining support from the Democratic Party. Join the conversation with your questions for Democratic gubernatorial candidate Jack Hatch. First, this news. It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Just a week away from Election Day, it's almost arrived. Perhaps you've cast your ballot in early voting. Polls showing in the governor's race, Governor Terry Branstad a double-digit lead over his Democratic opponent, State Senator Jack Hatch. We have Jack Hatch with us in our Des Moines studio for the entire hour, the gubernatorial candidate. In just a moment, we'll be talking about his priorities should he unseat Governor Branstad. But let's go back to April 23rd of this year, first of all, as the Iowa legislature was adjourning the 2014 session. Senator Hatch was honored by his Senate colleagues as he was leaving the chambers to campaign for the Democratic nomination for governor. They spoke of their work together over his 20-year career as an Iowa lawmaker and approved a resolution recognizing his service. Then Senator Hatch rose to address each of them individually and then reflected on his 20 years as an Iowa lawmaker.
Well, I do appreciate what people have said. Thank you very much. It's not so much the speeches on the floor that I will take with me, it's the personal and private conversations we've had throughout the years. My job here is protecting Iowans and allowing Iowa to grow. It's about protecting our natural resources and not forfeiting them in the future. It's about educating our youth but not forgetting our seniors. It's about healing those that are sick and helping the rest of us stay healthy. In the end, we are here to do a job. And I use this next phrase in complimenting Senator Harkin and giving him a bit of an honor when I was asked to describe who I thought Senator Harkin was. It's the same honor that I give us and why we are here. And for me, it's for those who smile through silent pain, cry behind closed doors, and fight battles that nobody knows about. That is why I'm here. And that's what I leave you. Thank you.
An emotional farewell to Senate colleagues in the Iowa Senate on April 23rd. Senator Jack Hatch, and he springing from April to the present time. He's live in our Des Moines studio. Senator Hatch, welcome to our program.
Thank you, Ben. It's good to be here.
When I reach out to our listeners this hour, your questions for Democratic gubernatorial candidate Jack Hatch, please call 1-866-780-9100. River to River at iowapublicradio.org, our email. You can tweet us at IPRTalk. Or find Iowa Public Radio on Facebook to leave your question. You face an opponent, Senator Hatch, whose name is inseparable from the title Iowa governor. He's held the job, Senator Terry Branstad, since 1983. There was a 12-year break. He's seeking an unprecedented sixth term. Why did you end your legislative career to face the longest-serving governor in the country?
Well, I'll tell you why it's been, I think, a struggle to get my message out. It's because the goals that I talk about almost seem impossible. It's the goals that I think that Iowa can strive for and reach beyond what Governor Branstad has given us. Governor Branstad has provided us easy access and confusing goals of trying to increase the job count to 200,000, and he miscalculates, tries to talk about property tax reduction, but he's only talking about corporate property tax reduction. He talks about transitional and transformational education, and he falls short of that. I think if you're going to be a governor, you have to lead. And my short-term goals sound like other career legacies, and my to-do list resembles others' greatest aspirations. And my campaign isn't about ideology or personality. It's about this, the know-how to get Iowa closer to the dreams others see impossible. When did our politics in Iowa get so small? When did a second or a few sentences become a substitute for a platform? When did talking points take the place of real results? I've always believed that politics was a method in which people can discuss the future and then strive to get something done. We've been coasting in the state, and we have not asked our citizens to participate nearly as much as we should. There's so many opportunities in the state that are being unrealized because our politicians are scoundering for and searching for the easiest answer, the one that would respond to the special interest groups that have the most money. And my politics has always been for those people who didn't have the money, who didn't have the resources. And this has always been a campaign where we knew we were going to be from behind. Mm-hmm. This is a campaign we always knew we were going to fight. And Terry Branstad represents that kind of politician that is that seems to have all the answers, but it has the answers only for the special interest.
Nevertheless, polls show that Iowans generally approve of Terry Branstad's job. Iowans are happy with the economy, generally speaking. What do you think they have wrong?
Well, let me just, you know, this is a national recovery. The memories of people seem to be pretty short. We had the greatest recession since the Great Depression. Banks were failing. Stocks were tumbling. Jobs were lost. Construction ended. And we had a national recovery. And because Iowa is an agricultural state, we were protected somewhat from that. We had fewer losses of any area in the country. The Midwest did. We did hit 6.5% unemployment, but the country sometimes went as high as 12%. We recovered, and it was a national recovery. And Iowa recovered well from that as well, just like every other state. The governor talks about more people working today than worked in 2007. Well, every state has more people working today. So I think we feel good about that. And This is I think, the opportunity to talk for us to talk about not just the jobs that we have saved and have created, but the fact that the wages need to be higher and people need to get back to more stable employment, and that we need to talk about economic security for our families for the future, not just for today. I know that people feel better than they did 5 years ago. That's good. Everybody in America feels better than they did 5 years ago. Mm-hmm. But this is a national recovery. It's not just not a state recovery.
So what would be your top, say, three priorities for the 2015 legislative session should you become governor?
Well, I think we could talk about education as being one of the largest priorities. The governor has been reluctant to embrace early childhood education. He came in at a time in which it was scheduled to expand, and he cut it way back, and we're building it back up again. I will have early childhood education for every four-year-old. I also will raise the minimum or the maximum age for attendance from 16 to 18-year-old. There's no reason our 16 and 17-year-old kids should be quitting school. We haven't given up on them. I haven't given up on them. I want every kid who goes into the ninth grade to graduate from high school. Let's not give them an easy way out. We'll have to invest in this. Not every kid learns the same way. And we've learned that there's so many individual challenges that this state can reach out and really be the best in the world, really be that world-class education we should be, instead of accepting something less than that. And so we'll be focusing on making sure that every kid graduates from high school. And then, of course, is the college debt. The governor is talking about freezing college debt. That's his answer to higher education costs spiraling up. That's really short-sighted. He provides no real leadership for the community college student or the private college and university student. A freeze is decided every year, and it's political. You border regions were considering increasing it today, and the pressure has prevented them from doing a third freeze in a row. I have a proposal that would lock in tuition for a freshman year for all 4 years of their for their university studies.
What do you think is behind the dramatic inflation of the cost of higher education?
I think there's a higher cost in almost everything right now, and I think that's probably, you know, we have more students than we did before, so there's an increase in the number of facilities, because of the opportunities we have there, so it's expanding.
Mm-hmm. What else? So education, you would focus. What other priorities would you have?
Well, we also talk about, you know, we want to do a middle-class tax cut. I mean, the governor talks about a commercial property tax cut. He says it's the largest in the state's history. I don't think too many residents felt the reduction of their property taxes, but the big corporations got the reduction. And I think it's time for middle class to find that they have a recovery in this state as well. And we would provide a middle-class tax cut that would focus on the two things that Iowa values the most, our productivity and our children. We are the sixth highest state of two-income families in the country. So why don't we give a tax cut to those families that are making two incomes, reward productivity, and reward families that have children. Right now, we have a $40 deduction per child in the state. Some states have $6,000 per child. I'm going to raise it to a little bit above $500 per child to reward those families that have children, and knowing that it's expensive, and let's value children a little bit and show that we value them in our tax policy. So that would be a significant savings. We anticipate an average of about $1,000 per family. And that's built in a detailed analysis that we released back in January on a growth rate that was very conservative. So that's very sustainable for us if we can do that. I also, the third area of increase would be economic growth and economic development. Right now, we have a board in Des Moines that's making all the decisions on how the tax credits and grants are given to corporations. And what I want to do is reverse that. Instead of a top-down approach, let's go from the community up. And that's where Monica Vernon and I, my lieutenant governor running mate, have done most of our work on economic growth from the city council and the communities up. That's who knows.
What does that look like in practice?
In practice, it means that we will divide the state into four regions. Instead of one board providing $210 million to corporations throughout the state, we're going to focus on four congressional areas. Each one will have their regional board. Every city and county in this state has plans for economic growth. They know where the jobs are. They know where the employers are. They know who's going to be expanding their opportunities. We're going to build and have visionary planning like we did under the Vilsack administration, where we would have really the community deciding how to do it. Mm-hmm. Look at Cedar Rapids after the flood of 2008, or Dubuque, Iowa City, even Mason City. Those communities got together and started rebuilding their community. They invested in things that had meaning and were immediate, and that's where we think we can spend most of our investment in the state, is partnering with cities and counties and private businesses so that we could have the growth in the areas that are most important. And it would mean that we would focus largely on small businesses. Right now, the grants that are given out are to the largest corporations. The fertilizer plant in Lee County, for instance, got $110 million. That's almost half of the appropriations given out for any 1 year to this to our growth policy. I think that's not sustainable, and it shows a real special interest.
Democratic gubernatorial candidate Jack Hatch with us live for this hour of River to River. If you'd like to join our conversation with a question for Senator Hatch, 1-866-780-9100. Our email, rivertoriver@iowapublicradio.org. Tweet us at IPR Talk, or find Iowa Public Radio on Facebook to leave a question. While we're on the topic, Senator Hatch, of economic development, this is an email from one of our listeners, Lori. Please address those that say you used your position to benefit your own business interests. I read what the Des Moines Register said about this, and they credited you for not using your position for your own benefit. You might want to expand it on what you do. For those unfamiliar, you're a developer.
Right. My wife and I, Sonia, are affordable housing developers. We build apartments for low-income Iowans in Des Moines and Cedar Rapids. And it's through federal tax credits. We get tax. Every state gets a federal allocation. The state has a process in which they award these federal tax credits to developers. We've been blessed by getting about 9 of these projects over the past 13 years, and it's very competitive. There's no implication at all that being a state senator implies that I get any special interest or special treatment. These are not state tax credits. This is something that the Branstad administration has proposed to really hide the problems they have in their own scandal-ridden administration, to bring up a case that would bring a typical feeling about politicians using their position to help them. Since 2007 passed on a number of legislation that would have any involvement at all with housing that we do in the state. I've done this before. I was a candidate for governor. I let my colleagues know exactly what I was doing. Everything we did was in the open. All of my proposals are tested and scored in the open. The governor has just taken this opportunity to show that he doesn't really care what the truth is. He was going to manufacture a problem. He's been told that it was wrong. His campaign has ignored it. The Des Moines Register did a thorough investigation of my business. They found everything was open, and that I followed all the rules, and that they even complimented me for the type of work that I was doing. This is a cynicism in government that they were playing off of. It's one of the difficulties and challenges that we had. So it was really manufactured by the other campaign.
Senator Hatch, your campaign returned to the TV airwaves yesterday, I believe, this mm-hmm. after several weeks in which your opponent ran campaign commercials unchallenged by anything from your campaign. You've been hindered by lackluster fundraising, minimal support from the Democratic Party, and some like-minded independent groups. What are the reasons for such poor fundraising and the support that I'm sure you wish would have been more?
Well, I have to question your use of adjectives. That there has not been a poor fundraising. Actually, we have receive more funding from individuals than previous gubernatorial candidates.
Why cut off your TV ads if you have the funding for them?
Well, I said these are individuals. Now, the National Political Action Committees have not funded this campaign, have not contributed. The use of money and the reliance on money has been just awful these last two cycles, and you know from our own experience that the outside funding has increased the expenditures by 2 and 3-fold. I mean, this Senate race is going to be $60, $70, maybe $100 million race. That's never happened before. You can't compete if you're going to have that kind of expenditure in a race. The governor's been raising money for 4 years. We've been raising money for a little over a year and a half. It's not been lackluster. We've raised over $2 million. It's expensive, however, to do this. We've maintained a pretty efficient organization. We've had 3 TV ads up in this campaign. So I think we've done pretty well, and I think the reports and maybe the media is a part of this, just because we can't run the same level of ads as my opponent. It characterizes our campaign as lackluster because I'm not raising money from the special interest out of Washington. It means I don't have Democratic support. That's really unfortunate to have a campaign characterized that much. We have been giving our messages out all through this campaign, through earned media, through campaign literature. I've been going all over the state, just finished the 99-county tour. My running mate and I are going on the road again tonight, leaving Des Moines to go to Mason City and 38 other cities around the state, meeting with the voters one-to-one. We've been part of the Democratic Campaign Coordinating Committee. I have door knockers out there, just as many as Bruce Braley and Dave Lobsack and Stacey Apple and Pat Murphy and Jim Maurer. We have been involved in the literature drops and door knocking all over the state. So the Democratic Party has been very supportive of our campaign. The national Democratic interest groups have not. And that's because they have limited resources themselves.
And because we have, unusually, three congressional races, you seem to indicate.
Three congressional races that we could win all three of them. It's very tight. The first and the third are within a couple points of each other. Jim Maurer is closer to Steve King than any other previous candidate we've had. Of course, the open seat in the Senate has taken all of the national attention. It is clear that the control of the Senate is the highest priority of the Democratic Party nationally, and that's where they're putting their resources. That's not to imply that we don't have support or that we're not out there every day.
Okay, we were coming up on a break. I want to get one caller in before we have our break. Maureen is with us from Des Moines. Maureen, welcome, and you're on the air with Democratic gubernatorial candidate Jack Hatch.
Yes, thank you.
Hello, Maureen.
I have a quick question. As a result of Iowa especially, we seem to be a state that really champions family, and it has to do with the low income especially and in our current minimum wage. I'm just curious why as a state we seem to believe that $15,000 a year is a good enough for a person working 40 hours a week. Judge them for using, let's say, food pantries or child care subsidies instead of raising it to where we would have an increased amount of state.
We're coming up on our break, Maureen. I think we got it. Let's talk about that, Jack Hatcher. Raising the minimum wage, should Iowa go it alone from $7.25 to $10.10?
Absolutely. I've supported the minimum wage to $10.10. Nobody working 40 hours a week, play by the rules, should be living below poverty. And that's the bare minimum. I think we did, as we remember, we raised the minimum wage 7 years ago when we were 2 years before the federal minimum wage was put into place. So Iowa can do it alone. Other states have done it. We should do it.
Is there support in the legislature currently?
There will be support when I get elected because of this. You know, Ben, part of being a governor is having the leadership to understand the consequences of good public policy and understanding that sometimes there are things you have to fight for. I will fight for the minimum wage of our working families. I will not be fighting for the minimum profits of corporations. They could do that alone. I'm working for the Iowa family. I'm working for the Iowa family that has people working every day playing by the rules.
Your questions for Democratic gubernatorial candidate Jack Hatch this hour. He'll be with us in the second half hour as well, live in our Des Moines studio, 1-866-780-9100, rivertoriver@iowapublicradio.org. Tweet us at IPR Talk or find Iowa Public Radio on Facebook. Lots to talk about still with Jack Hatch. The environment, one of those things. When we come back, it's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Tomorrow on this program, of course, Politics Wednesday will be the final Politics Wednesday before Election Day next Tuesday. We'll be joined tomorrow by political analysts Dennis Goldford of Drake University and Chris Larimer of the University of Northern Iowa. Of course, we'll talk about the congressional races and that nationally watched open Senate seat. Still polls very close there between Joni Ernst and Bruce Braley. Tune in tomorrow over the noon hour with your questions and comments about the final week of our politics. Today, Democratic gubernatorial candidate, State Senator Jack Hatch, is with us in our Des Moines studio answering questions. looking to make a dramatic comeback, if our polls are to be believed, and unseat Governor Terry Branstad, deny him a sixth term as governor of Iowa. Your questions, 1-866-780-9100, river to river at iowapublicradio.org. Senator Hatch, let's go right to our calls. Let's go to Jason in Des Moines. Hello, Jason. Welcome to our program. What's your question for Senator Hatch?
Well, hi. Yes, my name's Jason. I am the press officer of Iowa Atheists and Freethinkers, and I'd like to know what future Governor Hatch would do to maintain the separation of church and state, especially since this current governor has been very willing to blur the lines whenever it suited his agenda. What would you do?
Well, that's a general question. I am very supportive, obviously, of the distinctions in the separation of church and state. I think there's a certain role of in civic politics and civic government for all views that need to be presented. And I think that we have to respect and honor the religious diversity of the state wherever we go. That is individual choices at its most personal level. So you will not find me walking on the thin line of this. I respect it and will keep it separate.
Go to Todd. It's Scott County. Hi, Todd. Welcome to our program.
Hey, thanks, man. Thanks for having me on tonight. I'm really glad you have these candidates on the air, and I hope that as state-owned, taxpayer-funded media that you're able to get the other candidates on the air, too, for a good discussion. My question is for Senator Hatch. You've been in the Senate for 22 years, I think, and while in the Senate, what efforts were you able to make to end the funding of over the 60,000 non-existent students that don't exist and that are costing Iowans $500 million a year? And while I'm still on the air, I also want to see if you can address, given the fact that Branstad's number one donor and who is the head of the Board of Regents, Bruce Rafsetter, is also your business partner, what do you say to your critics that say you're in the race against an inevitable candidate like Terry Branstad just to throw the race?
Okay, Todd, thank you.
Ooh. Well, let's start with that second one first. No one gets into this race to throw it. I'm not in here for to be a sacrificial lamb for anybody. Bruce Rafsetter and I have were partners in a commercial business 10 years ago. I respect Bruce and his relationship with me. We've kept that separate. We do not have political allegiance toward that. We are much different than, as you can imagine, we haven't had a business relationship since we bought those buildings 7 years ago, and don't plan on having any additional relationship in the business. My politics and his are completely different. I am a businessman, and I have respected Bruce as a business person in my business with me. We've treated each other appropriately and respectfully. I think the decisions that he's made on the Board of Regents are questionable. We've talked about that publicly in my campaign. And so there is absolutely no collaboration at all. Secondly, on the phantom students you talked about, that is a old formula that we have. It's called allowable growth, and now it's called supplemental aid. It is a way of reporting students that come in and out of school districts. I've said publicly that we need and should need a new updated formula where we can provide state aid based on existing and established numbers. So those phantom students that you referred to is part of I think it's like a 35-year-old formula that that the state had way before I got in there.
Democratic governor for candidate Jack Hatch, state senator, 1-866-780-9100. Before we go back to another caller, Senator Hatch, let's have you go into some depth on the environment. Your environmental priorities for sure. Iowa would be what?
Well, you know, I was at the White Rock Conservancy a couple of months ago. That's, of course, the Garris family has contributed over 5,000 acres to a conservancy. And talking to Liz Garris and her farm manager partner, Darwin, we are seeing an extraordinary opportunity we have in Iowa to be able to protect our soil, protect and clean our water, and ensure profitability if we start looking at new ways of farming and conservation. And the nutrient reduction plan that the state initiated last year is a good place to start, but it needs to have two things to make it effective. One, we need to be able to have measurable goals so that we'll be able to measure the progress that we make. And secondly, I will not veto appropriations. You need to have appropriations to work with farmers to incentivize them to use best practices. What I've proposed is that instead of trying to use this statewide, I would like to be able to find a watershed and create an experimental station. Get all the farmers and producers and cities and towns and consumers to really engage on how we could use best practices, because we have a huge problem in the state. We have soil erosion that if we are not students and properly use the best farming practices, we're going to lose our topsoil. Since 1850, we've lost 8.5 inches. That doesn't seem very much, but that means we only have 5.5 inches left of topsoil. That's by the Iowa State University standards. It's critical that we save the soil, use best practices, and allow our farmers to engage both in best practices and profitability at a time where one usually gives into the other, and normally the environment loses. So we're going to be very aggressive about establishing standards, appropriating money, and to focus our attention on an area that we could determine and judge very quickly what the best practices are, and then encourage our farmers to engage in these best practices so that we could preserve our soil, have cleaner water, and at the same time make sure that our farmers have the strong, productive agriculture that they need.
Specifically to water quality, and this is an issue in the open Senate race, how much should the EPA, the Environmental Protection Agency, be involved in regulating our waterways in Iowa, down to the level of farmers' ponds and drainage ditches? Or where do you see the role of the state picking up and the federal government stopping or not?
That's a great question, and I think that's one of the reasons we have federal intervention, is because the state government has been very lax in working with farmers and getting some of these hard questions answered. You know, I've spent my entire career looking at the impossible. I was the author of the underground storage tank bill that literally cleaned up and eliminated point source pollution from underground storage tanks. People back then, 1998, 1990, said that was impossible to do. But we did it because we pulled people together. We had stakeholder meetings. It took me 2 years. But we now have absolutely eliminated municipal drinking water contamination from leaking underground storage tanks. The only state that has done that and provided a safe fuel and gas network throughout the whole state. I see this as the same kind of challenge. And as Iowans, we could reach that challenge if we just put our mind to it. We have to take command of this as a state and not give in to the individual special interests of the large agricultural corporate farming operations that want loose regulations so that they could maximize their immediate profit. That hurts all of us. And if we continue down that road, I can assure you the federal EPA is going to get harder and harder on our case. And you can always blame the federal government. This governor likes to do that a lot. Blames the EPA for the falling corn prices. I mean, that's just kind of ridiculous. But he keeps on saying it because people want to believe that the EPA is bad for our country. Well, you know what? I know Iowans can do better. I know we can clean up our water. But we can't do it if we don't have a governor that's going to lead from the front, that's going to get all the stakeholders together, who understands that there are going to be issues that we have to meet head on. And that is about chemicals, it's about practices, it's about farming practices, it's about consumer desires and consumer expectations. We have to do this together. People who use chemicals on their lawn in the cities are part of the problem as well. So I don't want to put this all on the farming community.
You don't use, any chemicals on your lawn?
No, as a matter of fact, we don't have a lawn in our house here in Des Moines. It's all flowers and perennial flowers that my wife has put together.
Okay. Jeff is in Iowa City joining our conversation with Democratic gubernatorial candidate Jack Hatch. Jeff, what's your question for Senator Hatch?
Oh, yeah, I'd like to ask Senator Hatch how he can, his claims that he's for working people and against the corporations. How can you justify voting for Governor Bramstead's huge tax cut for Walmart? Property tax cut, which shifted the tax burden from big multinational corporations in Iowa to homeowners and the elderly. I mean, it sounds hypocritical. I say this as a supporter. I've got a yard sign up for you.
Okay,
but,
Jeff.
How do you justify this?
Thanks for the question, Jeff, from Iowa City.
Jeff, I was one of two senators that voted against that proposal. In the Iowa Senate 2013 when he proposed it and got to the floor of the Senate, and we killed it for the very reason you said. It had shifted the property tax burden on to the residential homeowners. The second time it came up, the Senate Democrats negotiated a better deal where we were going to provide more relief for small commercial property owners, limit the amount of property tax relief from the big corporations to only a 10% cut, and we promised a backfill to the cities and counties for the lost revenue. And that was a Democratic initiative that created that. And at the same time, that was the leverage we used to the governor to pass Medicaid expansion, which was a bill that I wrote, and 90% of the bill that we finally passed and that he signed was a Democratic initiative. It was my signature on it. And we worked to get almost 200,000 more Iowans health care because we basically traded our support for Medicaid expansion and for the property tax bill that we negotiated in a better way. So that's why we did it, and it's something that we have to make sure we don't continue to do. That expansion of property tax reduction is going to have to be looked at very carefully in the next couple of years.
Senator Hatch, there's been a great deal of change in attitude in this country about marijuana, medical marijuana also. Some states have changed their laws, Colorado, Washington State, and allowing recreational use of marijuana. What is your position on it? Should medical marijuana in Iowa be expanded?
Absolutely. I was one of the original authors of 2 years ago to use medical cannabis for treatment for chronic diseases. I have to compliment Republicans and Democrats in the Senate and my bipartisan support in the House that worked really hard to get beyond this kind of bias on recreational marijuana as an issue. We did the right thing in passing something this year. It turned out to be more complicated. I am in favor of expanding medical marijuana to all chronic diseases. We need to have it grown here. We need to have it dispersed here. We need to have it regulated here. I support the interim committee's recommendations. And we also need to allow it for more families that have chronic diseases so that more Iowans can take advantage of this. This goes all to the issue of consumer choice. And medical cannabis is completely different from recreational marijuana. And that's where we have to look for it, and that's where we need to support it fully.
Could you one day envision Iowa approving recreational use of marijuana? Is this on that path?
Well, I think it's a conversation we are having. We also want to look at what other states are doing. This is one area in which I know Iowans are going to be very cautious about. We should be cautious with it, but I think it's one in which the conversation will continue, and I will be very supportive of the legislative process that we go through in order to make that determination.
1-866-780-9100, our closing minutes with Senator Jack Hatch. Let's go to Christine. Christine joining us from Waverly. Thank you, Christine. What's your question? Christine, are you there in Waverly? Yes, Christine is not there. Let's talk a little bit about mental health care in the closing minutes, if we could, Senator Hatch. You were chair of the Health and Human Services Committee in the Senate. Iowa currently facing a shortage of mental health care providers. outline the problem you see and how you propose to solve it.
Well, we proposed a correction last year. I was the lead sponsor of the reform of mental health services 3 years ago, where we took a statewide system, regionally managed and locally delivered, and created fairness in all mental health services. Prior to that, we had every county doing something differently, different payment scores, different services. People were confused. There was conflict between the counties and the state. It was dysfunctional, and people weren't getting served. So we created a statewide system that had all the services that any Iowan could go to at any of the counties to be served with state assistance. We had it regionally managed, so we built capacity, so we had multiple counties working together. We have a mental health hospital in every one of those regions. We have mental health service opportunities and providers in all those regions. We have now a stable system. What we want to do next is to expand it. We need to expand it to children. Children are not getting the services that they need. We need to expand it on areas of reimbursement and integrating it with the Affordable Care Act. As we said during the debates of health care reform, we now will be able to have mental health services in the policies, the insurance policies that that we get as private individuals or in group insurance policies. That was never the case before. We have savings of almost $60 million from the general fund now that are being shared with private insurance carriers because those services are now under private insurance. We are really developing a very strong network of our hospitals and our providers and our community centers so that individuals can get better served. And we're very fortunate. One of the reasons I want to be governor is that because I know that we can carry this to the next level without being concerned about the ideological differences in health care reform that seems to be going on in this country.
Right.
We're going to take it really seriously.
Let me follow up on that point. You really took the lead on pushing for the Affordable Care Act in Iowa, yet polls continue to show Obamacare still not very popular among Iowans. An Iowa poll of this month, I believe, earlier, 55% would like a repeal, 39% would like to see it left largely the way it is. Does it surprise you that the Affordable Care Act is still so unpopular in these polls?
Well, the problem is that the Republicans have made the Affordable Care Act Obamacare and associated it with a system of care that is not reflected in the law. Everybody likes the fact that our 26-year-old children can stay on the family policy. Everybody likes the fact that there are no pre-existing conditions that will prevent you from getting insurance. Everybody likes the lifting up a lifetime limits on any long-term care that you're getting. Everybody likes the fact that our seniors now have a reduction in their prescription drug policies because of the Affordable Care Act. We are now insuring over 150,000 more Iowans because of that. Our health care is being delivered better. We are becoming the healthiest state, or could become the healthiest state, if we understand that it's about the services we provide. Everyone loves those if you ask them individually, but together, government and politics has been poisoned to believe that that was a bad thing. I was responsible for ensuring that we had the highest percentage of children covered in health insurance of any state in the country prior to the election of President Obama. We've done some good things here. I'm proud of the work that I've done. I'm proud of the fact that that will have an impact on saving people's lives and creating a better quality of life for people, where we are having really a great discussion and a shift from individual costs to a more insurance policy cost, where hospitals are getting stronger and they're networking, where doctors are getting reimbursed for what they're doing, and for individual families having the security that they're going to have health care. They don't have to choose anymore between their drugs and their heat or their food or their clothing for their children. This is an extraordinary opportunity, and I'm glad that I was able to take a lead on each of those individual initiatives. What people want to believe about health care now shows the difference between the leadership. We have, and I will continue to have, a strong health care initiative in this state. We will work with our providers. We will work with families. We will work with middle-class families who are being hit the hardest in all of these costs. Our premiums are going lower because of this opportunity that we've had. and we're beginning to understand that this is going to be a good thing for all of us.
So in the 30 seconds we have a remaining, so in 5 or 10 years, Obamacare will be seen much differently than today?
In 5 or 10 years, the Affordable Care Act and health care in America will be viewed much differently. People will be more healthy, and we'll have a better economic situation because of that. Our employers will be able to provide health care to their employees, and families will know the security, as they're already existing today, of being able to have their kid who has asthma not to be denied services. This is important for this state to know, and that's what I want to do as governor, is to provide those challenges that people think are too difficult to tackle. I want to be the governor that tackles those tough decisions and have a conversation with Iowans. And that's what I promise if I'm elected this coming Tuesday.
State Senator Jack Hatch, Democratic gubernatorial candidate, thank you for joining us, coming into our studio in Des Moines today. Thank you.
Thank you, Ben.
River to River is produced by Lindsay Moon, Emily Woodbury, and Claire Roth. Tomorrow on this program, of course, Politics Day. Join us when Dennis Goldford of Drake University and Chris Larimer of the University of Northern Iowa will be with us. Of course, looking at that open Senate race in Iowa in the context of the national races. Back tomorrow with more River to River. I'm Ben Kiefer. Thanks for joining us.